That's what makes this podcast unique, is that we open with every guest says their name.
Oh, yeah. This was something I insisted on.
Hi, my name is Slim Shady. Has everyone done that one? They've done that, right?
Slim Shady's probably been done. But
hi, my name is Jim Gaffigan. And I feel ecstatic about being Conan O'Brien's friend.
Fall is here, hear the yell. Back to school, ring the bell. Brand new shoes, walking blues. Climb the fence, books and pens. I can tell that we are gonna be friends. Yes, I can tell that we are gonna be friends.
Hey there, welcome to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, a podcast that aims to please.
It's a nice slogan.
And pleases to aim.
Sometimes you can reverse things and it's clever. No.
That was one I gave no thought to beforehand, and it means nothing to say it pleases to aim.
Yeah. What would be our slogan if we had a slogan?
Still making these. hope you're hearing them.
Conan O'Brien needs a friend. Conan O'Brien friends a need. Doesn't work.
You didn't think about it ahead of time either.
It's occurring to me now
that very few of those actually work and that you have to be clever and think of them.
Yeah.
You can't just say, well, you know, time to take out the trash and trash out the take.
No.
You have to actually think ahead of time and map it out and make sure that it lines up.
Yeah.
But I can't help it. I'm in the mood to keep trying those without even thinking about it and hoping that one magically works out.
And you know what? One will.
Yeah. And well, eventually one will, and eventually will
one? Nice.
Damn it.
You're almost there.
No, it doesn't.
First of all, don't get mad at me. And second of all, I'm trying to be encouraging.
Yeah, but when you encourage someone who just failed, you're being condescending. you know, I just tried to take my first step and fell down a flight of stairs.
When you encourage someone who's condescending, you're being
Wait, hold on a second. I'm trying my best to come up with one of these. We've got to come up with a legitimate one before this introduction is over.
Okay.
But remember, let's just put our best foot forward.
Yeah.
And remember, forward your best foot.
No, that doesn't work either. That's not good.
These are awful.
Those are bad.
These are bad.
Yeah.
And you know what? If you try and don't succeed, eventually you'll succeed in trying. Nope. Not good.
Well, that one's true, but it's just not poetic.
No. It makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. But does it sense make?
Oh, now you're just turning into Yoda.
And I'm getting angry. Why am I getting angry?
You realize Yoda probably said many of these, and just other Jedis were around going, oh, Jesus. You know?
Yeah.
Yoda was probably around just disappointing people with his lousy fake aphorisms, you know?
Are you comparing yourself to Yoda?
No, I just can picture him saying, remember when, you know, when you add cream to coffee, sometimes coffee you cream.
See, that one's pretty good.
And you're like, what? Yoda? And he's like, wise I am. And am I wise? And you're like, no.
It's working as Yoda, though.
Yeah, because people give Yoda so much slack. Because Yoda talks that way and because he's like just tiny little creature, wrinkly creature, and he's 8,000 years old.
Wow, we're exposing a Yoda beef here.
No. I'm just saying he gets a lot of slack. You know that Yoda shows up at a party and everyone's like, oh my God, it's Yoda. Hey, Yoda, thanks for being here.
Good to be here it is. And is good to be is now here.
And people are like, wow, that blew my mind, Yoda.
Your mind blew. Blew why you?
Yoda, what?
I'll blow you.
No, Yoda, no, Jesus.
Don't do that to Yoda.
Yoda, that's disgusting.
No, sorry, didn't mean oral sex I give. Tried to be clever with backwards talk. Made mistake, not you I blow, blow I you.
What? Yoda, you gotta go right now. There are kids here.
Mistake I made. Sorry, B.I.
B.I., what are you, a pirate now, Yoda?
I go now, but now I go.
What? You have to use the bathroom?
No, leave me do. Now I leave.
You do.
Dude, oh, fuck.
Yoda. Yoda, what is your problem?
Try to be clever, I do. But backwards say, hard to make.
What?
Yoda having stroke? No one know, because of Yoda speak.
He's right. This MRI shows he's having a major occlusion in his brain. He's had a terrible stroke that's affected his speech center, and no one knew it because they just thought he was being 2,000 years old clever.
hospital take me to? Hospital now I do.
What?
He's just a Dr. Seuss Yoda.
Yeah.
One fish, two fish, red fish, blue fish I be.
Yeah, I think Yoda got a ton of slack. And I think there were many times when Yoda had a few too many drinks and he was hanging around.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, wow, Yoda's saying such cool shit. But if you think about it the next day, if anyone taped it, you know, on their phone,
yeah,
they'd be listening to it going, oh my God, this is terrible.
Like, he's not well.
Yeah, or else she went home with him and this is what he said?
She went home with him?
Yeah, well, I mean, he's like picking up ladies left and right, which is like,
he is?
Sexy you are sexy you
no,
do.
Can you?
Oh, wow, that's so clever.
I can't do this.
Yeah, they pick him up and go home with him.
No, don't do that to Yoda.
Yoda's a swinger.
What are you talking about? He is.
Yeah.
Come on, guys.
You kidding? Women would go crazy for him.
They would for Yoda.
Oh, Yoda, what's up? Well, you know, what's going on? It's so nice to meet you. Why is that my woman voice?
Do you know there is a woman Yoda in The Phantom Menace called Yaddle?
There is not.
Yeah, I swear.
Okay.
Did they do it? Like, is it a thing?
I don't know that they're like connected romantically. Oh. Hold on, I'll show you a picture of her. She's hideous looking.
Well, no,
I'm probably
beautiful to Yoda.
I don't know. Tell me what you think when you see.
Okay,
this.
Let's see. Oh my God. Oh my God. Is that Yaddle?
That's Yaddle.
Oh, Yaddle, same species as me. Supposed to be attractive, she is. But horrible finding her, I am.
Maybe they had baby Yoda, Grogu.
No. When
Yoda goes home with girls, are they human women?
Is human women. He's
not Yaddles.
No, he goes to the clubs. Yaddles. No, they aren't Yaddles. He's not going home with the... Oh my God.
Oh, geez.
Wait, go back to that other one. Look at that hair right there. Post that. That is me in 21 years.
You're a Yaddle.
Look at that hair. I'm a Yaddle.
I didn't want to say anything, but she has your hair.
She has my hair.
Yeah.
So someone at Lucasfilm tried to think of what's the most hideous look we could go for.
Yeah.
And when they got to the hair, they took Conan hair.
They did.
She's got the pompadour and everything.
She really, the same color, the same type of hair. It's all... identical.
Sexy you are, Yaddle, because Conan hair you grew.
He likes you?
Yeah,
he's a fan of yours?
He's turned on by my hair.
Face hideous it is, but hair makes me horny it
he
is.
Made Yaddle wear that wig to look like Conan.
One request, Yaddle, I have. Conan wig you wear. Then we do.
Okay. I'm sorry. Yoda gets so much slack. He's such an asshole. All right. We got to go. We got lots to say.
We have to stop this.
We have to get going. My guest today is back.
Yeah.
He's back on the show, which I'm very happy about. He's a hilarious comedian whose 9th comedy special, Jim Gaffigan, Comedy Monster, is available on Netflix tomorrow. Jim Gaffigan, welcome.
A lot of people don't know that we're, you know, we really don't get along.
Right. We are like Dean Martin and Joey Bishop.
Right.
We look like we're having fun together on stage.
Can you make yourself look older?
I can.
We're like, you know, Dean Martin. These kids these days, they don't know about Joey Bishop. God bless America. That was back when comedy was real. Now,
I love to frustrate any listener references they don't understand.
When I walked in, I noticed that you shamed me. You called me, oh, here he is. He's vaxxed and waxed. Like, why are you so anti-vax?
It's just something that...
you don't believe in, right?
Well, yeah. The thing is, I was listening to Joe Rogan, and he was making a lot of sense. And so I immediately started working out. And I had been vaccinated, but I actually went to the doctor and got unvaccinated.
Well, you know what I think?
Which is hard to do.
I mean,
by the way, I just want to get that out there. I am the first celebrity to go and have my vaccine undone. Yeah.
No, I mean, the thing about Joe Rogan is, like, I do feel like a lot of what he said has been taken out of context. Mm-hmm. But there is, and we all have friends that are like, hey, I'm not anti-vax, but I'm about to tell you that I'm anti-vax.
Yes, yeah.
You're hey, I got it. I'm just saying I think Fauci's the devil.
Yes.
I don't know why an 80-year-old man would wait 50 years into his career in an administration to then try and take over the country.
It's called the long con. When Fauci got into medicine, he said, I'm going to destroy America and bring it to its knees when I'm in my 80s. That's what he said. And he's true to his word. But I guess – look, I don't want to spread misinformation, but right. And my dad is a scientist.
Yeah, he is. He's a doctor, right?
He's a doctor. He's a microbiologist. Right. And so this has caused a real rift in the family.
Right, because you don't believe in science.
I don't believe in evolution.
I don't believe in oxygen. There's no proof.
I can't see it. I can't see oxygen. Right. And if I can't see it, how do I know it's there?
Right. It's interesting. And I feel as though creative people – have people, particularly people that are into comedy, have such a unique point of view. They have a tendency towards conspiracy. Do you know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. they're more likely to embrace unusual thinking. And it's fine in a podcast situation, but like when it ends up.
Are you seeing, you think this is prevalent in the comedy community?
I think it's very prevalent. I think there's a downright suspicion of. You know, I think there's an untrusting kind of approach to comedians. Is that how you pronounce it? Comedians.
It's so strange that you've been in the profession. And let me just point out also, you're quite well known and renowned for being a great comedian.
Comedian.
But you've never taken the time to pronounce it correctly.
Well, you know, where I'm from, we say comedian.
I love the great thing is to say I've heard it both ways. That's the great when you're caught mispronouncing something. Always say I've heard it both ways. Actually.
I've heard it both ways.
Yeah, I've heard comedian.
Comedian.
And comedian. But I didn't realize that now that you think about it, comedians love to almost define themselves as I don't think the way everybody else does.
Right.
So I could see that leading to – I mean, it's not like I'm keeping a list or anything, but do you have a lot of comedian friends that are saying, I don't know about this vaccine or I don't know about this mask wearing, not naming names, but is that something that you've heard about?
With the exception of you, I mean, I walked in and you were like anti-vax, but no, I would say there is a suspicion because comedians go along this path that they're rejecting generally, a path that you're supposed to take, which is like you go to college, you get a job, and then you play golf for 5 years. I think most comedians, if you're going to approach life that way, you're probably more likely to not trust what the government is telling. It's weird because there's also, you know, if you also love history, which I know you do, there has been incredible lies. You know, it's like, remember the Maine, that was just a con to get us in a war, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, are we being naive? You know what I mean? So I do find that my friends that are highly suspicious, there is part of me that's like, I don't know. I mean, there were no weapons of mass destruction. You know what I mean? We'll be right back.
Right. this got so heavy so fast, but I will say, I just don't see – when it comes to our desire to have a war in Cuba, you know, in the late 19th century, there was a real benefit to us, to the United States. When I say us, the United States, to get into that war. And so sometimes I get stuck on when people have a – so yes, and there was for the Bush administration a real interest in going into Iraq for other reasons. So I could see the reasoning behind it. And I don't necessarily believe this, again, I didn't think we'd be going down this path, but I don't necessarily believe that people willfully or intentionally lied, but they really wanted to believe something. That's how I feel about it. With COVID, I don't see the upside for the government to have to when people say like, oh, it's just the government, I think, what's the upside to shutting down the economy, having to really cripple the economy and put the country through 2 years of hell and in order to manufacture a serum that goes into our body for what reason? And they say, well, there's a chip. And I think they know where you are. If anybody really wants to know where you are, they've got a cell phone. Yeah. So none of that makes any sense to me. I don't understand how you can get to the conspiracy, but And I know I've just alienated most of my listeners because my listeners are very, very conservative.
They come to you for that's also another thing. We live in this day and age where there's stay in your lane. Don't have an opinion on certain things when the reality is that what we enjoy about people that are in comedy is that they do have opinions. So it is odd that we're, you know, that because I understand the hesitation of like, well, you know, I don't want to, you know, one person to feel uncomfortable, but you're like, it is absurd.
Yeah. But here's the other thing you just mentioned, which goes to you. And I think we share this. Most of your comedy, and I think the vast, vast majority of the comedy that I've enjoyed doing is we'll have opinions, but they're about the plight of humanity more than ripped from today's headlines.
Right.
Which I admire people that do that well, but it was never fuel for me. I never read the newspaper and went, wow, this has really got my brain going and this is going to give me something to talk about tonight. So I was almost the antithesis of, say, a Mort Saul. There's another – just passed away. So that's a name I feel like from the 1960s that I can bring up in good conscience. Sorry, listeners. But Mort Saul, extremely influential comedian and beloved in the early 60s. But and through the 60s. That was his kind of comedy. And then, of course, that's become – a huge part of American comedy.
Yes.
But whenever I've listened to you, you're talking about cottage cheese.
Yes.
And so, yes, I love hearing your opinion, but it is not about Fauci or it is not about, you know, I want to talk about this Theranos trial.
Yeah.
You're talking about, hey.
Yeah, no. Well, you know, some of it is
this cottage cheese.
Well, some
why
of it is,
you know.
I'm selfish. I selfishly don't want to do timely things that aren't, wouldn't be relevant later on.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's annoying. But also, I think some of it is people don't want to hear certain things from certain people, like big dorky white guys. And obviously, I don't include you, but like, you know,
well, everyone knows I'm very, very small and olive skinned.
But do you know what I mean?
There
is something about context. Context is a big thing. And so there is. But here's the other thing I've been thinking of, which I think is so weird. It's like, and this is more politics, is that we look at these people that are like, JFK Jr. is going to come back. He's going to be vice president, all this stuff. Yeah. And we're like, ha, 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 ha. Or like when people were like, Hillary Clinton's going to be arrested.
For drinking the blood of babies in the basement of a pizza parlor.
And we were like, ha, 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 ha. And there was a certain – you felt sad. You're like, oh, my gosh, that's so sad. But on the other side, there were all these people like once Biden's elected, Trump's going to jail. All these people are going to jail. All this. And we look just as foolish.
I think there might have been – you know, you're referring to this thing that happened a couple of weeks ago where – everybody, not everybody, but literally a lot of people. I want to say 2,000, 3,000 people gathered.
Yeah.
In Dealey Plaza, because there was an internet rumor, QAnon rumor, or fact that JFK Jr. was going to show up in Dealey Plaza on this date to announce that he was running with Donald Trump.
Right. Switching parties.
Switching parties. and then I kept thinking, why is he, if he's alive... Mm-hmm. Why is he choosing to show up in Dealey Plaza where his father was killed? First of all, so that's why I went right to, well, he picked the wrong location, you know, and how are you going to cater that? That's a very hard area to cater. But I'm also oddly comforted by the fact that.
I guess the only worst place to pick would be like Chappaquiddick. Like if he was like, I'm coming back.
Right.
And I'm going to be in the water in Chappaquiddick.
I'm in the water in Chappaquiddick to make my announcement. Yeah. But I am comforted somewhat by the fact that this is what humans do. It's what humans have always done.
And uniquely Americans, there's always been the know-nothings.
Right.
There's always – I mean, I, that's something that – I mean, I like history. I don't know as much as you, but I find it fascinating that America is made up of all these kind of people that were kicked out of every other country. They come over here, they get shit on for a generation. And then the second generation, the first thing they do is they find someone else to shit on.
Yes.
It's like my ancestors literally moved to Iowa because they were killing Catholics in Maine. Right. And so it's like
when I grew up, I lived in the house with my grandmother, who at the time was in her 90s, and she was born in the late 19th century. She had a very clear memory of New Year's Day in New York City, 1900. When the century changed. And she described it perfectly. She had a crystal clear memory of that day. And she remembered being taunted and teased for being Catholic. Yeah. And I just thought, what are you talking about? Yeah. You know, no one has the idea that anyone would tease me because I was Irish Catholic.
Yeah.
It was just absurd. But you go back a couple of generations, and that's exactly what happens is you get the Irish get here. And everybody shits on the Irish for a while.
Yeah.
And then the Irish are like, what are these Italians doing
here? Yeah. No,
and then both the Irish and the Italians are, they're like, what are those Polish doing here? You know, and
yeah. When I was growing up, all the jokes were Polish jokes, all of them.
Right.
Because it was I didn't grow up in a racist city like you, Tony. But
there's no there's no evidence that Boston was ever racist.
Really?
Yeah, ever.
There's none.
There's none. We can't find any. I've looked into it.
By the way, it's like even when people bring that up, I'm like, compared to where?
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean? Compared to what? Chicago?
Yeah.
Milwaukee? Atlanta?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Anyway, that's why
you came in. Very, and this is not the Jim Gaffigan I thought I'd see today. And I love this Jim Gaffigan, but you came in all hot and bothered. You wanted to talk, you wanted to go deep. You wanted to talk about real things. And I remembered my slogan used to be Jim Gaffigan taught us to laugh again.
That was your slogan.
Yeah, that was my slogan for years and years. You were coming on the late night show 50 years ago. I've known you forever, and you've always refused to go deep or get real. And
never.
You came in today, and you are on fire.
But I think
to talk about real things.
I think comedians are very sincere people, right? I mean, we horse around.
And why did you make space quotes when you said sincere people?
No, because I think that we because we're the sad clown that has to, instead of sitting in the reality, we have to, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. It's just stress. Maybe, you know, we're dealing with this. It's a very weird world we're living in.
I do tell my kids, yeah, you're living, this is, but by any stretch of the imagination, this is strange. You've just, you know, you had to go on Zoom for a year to be educated. You're wearing masks now wherever you go. Despite my telling them there never was a virus over and over again.
I mean, there isn't. You know what I mean? It's a pandemic. There's just something. There's part of me that wants to leap 10 years ahead just to see where we were off. I doubt in 10 years we're going to be like, yeah, Fauci went to jail. He did the whole thing.
The point that I like that you made is that, yes, the right – there are people on the right that take these crazy flights of fancy and believe these insane things, but they also do it on the left as well.
Yeah.
And it came out recently, and again, I can't believe we're talking about so much that's in the news because that's what neither of us does. But recently, remember when Trump was first elected, there was the Steele dossier.
Yeah.
And it was all about how there's a tape of Trump being urinated on by prostitutes in Russia. And that's why he is the puppet of the Russian regime. And now here we are, you know, 5 years later. And I'm just reading this article the other day that's in the New York Times or something. It said, that's all been discredited. That none of that ever existed. And I, you know, I remember you for a long time, there were so many people on the left that were wanting to make jokes about, I mean, I remembered my own writers pitching, oh, let's do a whole thing about, you know, on the late night show about how prostitutes urinated on Trump. And I remember thinking at the time, well, no, we can't do, because we don't even know if that's true.
Right.
And they acted like I was a prude. And I was like, well, no, I mean, we just don't have any proof that that's true. And also, it just seems He's a germaphobe. I don't think he let prostitutes urinate on him. And and I was just very, because I've been urinated on by prostitutes, I was very, not at my request, by the way. It was an accident.
And by the way, these the men that urinated were...
Yes.
They were vaxxed.
I made sure that the men who urinated on me, and I love very nice switcheroo, the men who urinated, and it was an accident, but they were vaxxed. But you came in a tizzy, and because you were—
I would say a tizzy.
You were in a tizzy, and we don't use that word much anymore in our culture, but you were in a real tizzy because you were late, and you were like—
I was
so
late.
And I wasn't, I didn't even notice that you were late. You were 6 minutes late. And it's, and I'm very chill about the podcast. This is not some, well, I am. I'm very chill about what time we start. And so you come strolling in and you were very upset because you said I had to use a rental car.
I was in tears.
What's the problem with using a rental car? Why did that put you into a tizzy?
Well, you know, I live in New York and I, most people in the entertainment industry that want to succeed eventually move to LA. And I never made that move. And I've lived
and
out here.
It's hurt you. It's hurt you.
Well, I've lived out here at times, but there's certain things that I, you know, I'm not smart enough to, like, I'm in a rental car and it's like, I didn't know how to, like, I sat there, the guy pulled it up, and I sat there for like a couple of minutes trying to figure out, you know, most people know how to work cars. And I was like, I didn't know
what
where.
What specifically didn't you know how to work? Because you know the steering wheel and you know.
I know the steering wheel. But I didn't know how to shift it into gear. Like, it was like there was this, it was on the steering wheel.
Yeah, it was on
but
the
it was
column,
a small one. So I was like, that can't be it. And it's I don't know. I'm just not that not that bright.
Yeah.
I'm just not ready. And, you know, my brother, Mitch, would love, you know, because it's a not, it's a fancy, kind of fancy car. Mind if I throw up right now?
You rented a fancy car.
They rented. I'm doing this project. I'm working on a film.
Okay. So they got you a fancy. Are you embarrassed when someone arranges for you to have a fancy car?
Yeah. Well, that's.
I get a little embarrassed sometimes if that happens, you know.
Well, it's not a super fancy car, but my manager's assistant was like, hey, we got you this car. And I'm like,
I saw you pull up
it's kind
in
of
a
waste.
1967 Silver Ghost Rolls Royce.
Yes. And no, but it's kind of wasted on me. You know, like fancy cars are kind of wasted on me. Like I'm not, I don't have that level of appreciation for cars.
I don't know. I don't have anything against people that do appreciate cars. I am quite content. I mean, I think that's, I think your lowest level car drives really well.
Yeah.
So I don't even know what that is.
I need
don't
air conditioning. That's what I need.
Right.
What is your, now you, do you collect, besides collecting, you know, you being part of Pizzagate, you collect babies. But like, what?
Well, just for their blood.
But do you collect guitars or something like that?
Yeah, but I do have guitars. But I this is going to sound terrible. Guitars are given to me by people. People and it started years and years ago when people knew that I hacked around on the guitar.
Yeah.
And so I have purchased shockingly few guitars.
Right.
And most of my guitars are ones that have been handed to me by people.
Elvis Costello. And
no, he did never gave me a guitar.
Bastard.
And he was sitting in the same chair you're sitting in not 5 weeks ago.
Right.
And I kept waiting for him to give me a guitar.
Who was the most? Who was the person you were most excited to meet besides me?
Wait, of all people, or
of let's keep it in the entertainment industry. You know,
yeah,
where you're like, I can't believe I'm kind of nervous.
Well, that would be Paul McCartney.
Paul McCartney.
Yeah, and I got to briefly meet George Harrison years ago, but I think Paul McCartney. I think easily just because I. You know, he's Paul McCartney, he's a Beatle, but also because I have such a depth of knowledge that I was, I knew too much about him. I've never known that much about someone that I've never really met before. So on a few occasions, I've gotten to hang out with him and it's, it was an act of will not to be staring at like his hand and thinking, so right. That's the hand that, and I know you do that with me. You stare at my hands.
Well, I mean, it's weird because you have like claw-like features. You know, a lot of people, I never noticed that on the show, that hand is very claw-like. But yeah. it's attractive in kind of like a claw-like feature.
We did a smart thing, which was because it's my right hand that's basically a chicken's claw.
Yeah.
We turned me so that my on the talk show, it was always my left side that you were seeing. And mm-hmm. that hid this sort of very small chicken's claw that I have for right hand. And so no one ever saw it. And there's little things you learn on the podcast
that's known
that you never
as the
know.
Chicken claw. It, within the industry, it was known as the chicken claw.
Yeah.
Just the positioning.
And occasionally we had to edit out. I think it was Christina Aguilera was on the show.
Yeah.
I came out to greet her after she sang a song, and this is mm-hmm. in the late 90s. Mm-hmm. And she said, I went to thank her, and she had not been briefed.
Right, because I was briefed.
Yeah, and she said, what the fuck? Mm-hmm. You have a chicken claw. And
that's kind of rude.
Yeah, and really was freaked out. And so we edited that out of the show.
Yeah.
And then we got Andy to dub over, thank you for having me on the show, Conan. And it was clear that that was not – her voice.
That his voice was too high.
His voice was way too high. This interview is either incredibly good or maybe one of the worst, but I can't tell. It's fantastic. I'm loving it.
Yeah, I'm kind of jealous. I'm jealous of people that that do podcasts because I feel as though it's kind of like it's essentially a play date, right?
Yeah.
It's a play date set up by our mommies. And but like otherwise, but you get to do them with different people. Who's the person that is the worst guest besides me? Who was the worst guest? That you will just ruin their day on the podcast. Yeah, on the podcast.
I'm not going to say. That would be a terrible breach.
That would be a breach of confidence.
A name popped into my head, but I'll never say who it was. Never,
right. ever. Because that's, you know what? That's
why
not
do
what
that?
You're made of.
And also, it's rude. It's mean. This person came on my show and—
Can you just tell us their last name?
Yeah. Yeah, sure I can. Yeah.
It happens to be Jonas, but it doesn't. You don't know which one it is.
Well, first of all, I've talked to all three of the Jonas Brothers separately.
Yeah,
and two of them were the worst ever, and one of them was the best.
Right.
So that's the answer.
I'm just glad that they finally got they have a special on Netflix. Finally, you know what I mean? I was like, when are they going to get a special? And I was like. Now it sounds like I'm anti-Jonas.
I want to clarify quickly. We've never had the Jonas Brothers on. It's not the Jonas Brothers. But the person I'm thinking of, their name rhymes with Jonas. So let's just leave it at that.
Bonus.
Yes. Jack Bonus was a terrible guest.
Jack Bonus.
Writer-producer.
All right,
so
as we head into the holidays, what holiday traditions happen at your household? Like, do you open presents in the morning? Do you do it at night? Does your wife do – does she have certain things that you
– Yeah. Yeah, my wife is –
Do you pretend to go to church or what do you do?
Well, just getting – this started out just very nice.
I'm
going to
ask a lot of questions.
Got super personal.
Yeah.
First of all, I will not celebrate – I live in Los Angeles and have for over a decade. Mm-hmm. I will not celebrate Christmas in Los Angeles. I will not do
it. You'll leave.
So we always try and go east. Her family's in Seattle. We were just there for Thanksgiving.
That's north.
I'm saying we go to Seattle or we go east, which is we go to Boston or we go someplace like to a top of a mountain. It must be snowy and cold for me on Christmas.
Oh, that's
I insist
fun.
On that.
That's
I
fun.
Insist on it. And there has to be some kind of weather system. There has to be some kind of feeling that it is, in fact, Christmas. Mm-hmm. And so I refuse to put on a 45, you know, SPF sunblock. Yeah. And celebrate Christmas in the yard and then take a swim. That's never going to happen.
Is it true that you will force your family to hear you sing Christmas songs for like an hour?
Oh, well, first of all, an hour, it's a lot longer than an hour.
It's a lot longer.
Yeah. Listen to this. Sleep in heavenly peace. Sleep.
Inhumanly.
Here, this is kind of a real question. You're somebody who loves music. I find music a mystery.
A mystery.
But like, if you could be a moderately successful musician, would you change your incredibly successful comedic career?
Yes.
You would do that in a heartbeat.
I would give it all up if I could be in a moderately successful rockabilly band.
Right.
Where I got to grow my sideburns super long and play a lot of Gene Vincent and just tons of like super fast time rockabilly.
So that
with
band,
Jimmy Vivino and a couple of other of my guys, and just travel around and do that and ruin my marriage. Relationship with my kids.
You would do that.
I think I would, yeah.
You're being facetious, but I think you really.
No, no, I'm not. There is part of me that that over the years, I mean, Jesus, almost 30 years of doing the late night show.
Yeah, that's too long to do anything, by the way.
Trust me, it's too long to breathe. So I, and you'll testify to this, Sona, because you were there for the 11 years that you were watching me go to rehearsal. All I wanted to do was play music with the band.
Yes.
And it was through sheer force of will that they got me to work on the comedy. But all I really wanted to do was
and
play.
Exactly and right. Is that something all your life, or did that develop later on?
I was always interested in it. And it was sort of, I knocked around on other instruments, but I didn't pick up a guitar until I was 22 and I came out to LA. And I've always told people the secret to learning an instrument is to have no relationship. I was single. I didn't have a girlfriend.
That's not a surprise to anyone listening. But go on.
You know.
No, but it's what's amazing about this story.
No.
What's amazing about this story is
I handed my heart to you. I handed my heart to you and you ripped it in
half. You're telling a story as if then at the end you're standing on stage holding a Grammy. But you essentially.
I know. Then none of that happened. Well, the whole time I was working on my comedy career, but this was my hobby. But I had a lot of time for my hobby because you watch TV in your $380 a month apartment in the flats in Hollywood near the La Brea Tar Pits, and you're wearing gym shorts and you sit there and you play those goddamn fucking chords over and over and over again while you're watching Saved by the Bell. And then you're suddenly a creep. Am I a creep, really?
Yeah.
Because I was in my early 20s watching a children's show.
Yes.
Because the girls were so pretty. I think it's really creepy.
Well, it wasn't creepy until you just said that last part.
I know. Yeah. The girls are pretty.
That's the weird calculation, right? Is all men end up being creepy?
I watched for Zach. Yeah.
Like there's no one that doesn't end up being creepy.
Well, also as
the Dalai Lama is probably creepy.
Oh, he's super creepy.
Right. Has he been on the – was he on the show?
He did it last week, and he's doing it again next week.
Yeah.
And he's always, worst guest ever.
Really? A lot of –
Because plugging. Everything with him was, well, in the next life, we'll find out. He was
what
insufferable.
What a cop out.
Yeah. I'd ask him anything, and he'd say, well, we must be present in the moment and in the next life. And then as he left, he said, I'm getting paid for this, right?
Yeah.
And I said, we don't pay our guests. And he said, this is a quote, fuck you. I want $100,000 in a suitcase, and I want it now.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know that like he, when I was on a show, another show, he took all the drinks and chips from the green room. And I was like, Dolly. And he was like, call me Llama.
Yeah. And remember, the reason he wears that robe is he has massive, massive pockets on the inside that are lined with tinfoil. So he's pouring dips. Chips. I mean, most of the time, if you go up and give the Dalai Lama a big hug, I tell you 65 pounds of snacks is going to be crunching and oozing out of him.
Cheese plates, too, which is just like.
Now, speaking of great religious figures, I know that you have performed for the Pope. Did you get to meet him or just perform for him?
I mean, I spent a weekend with him.
No, was this at his golf course?
I met him. I introduced my mother-in-law to the Pope. Yeah, that was a while ago.
I know, but I'm allowed to bring up things.
No, you're
you
not.
Asked me
you're
about
not.
Learning the guitar in 1985, so why can't I ask you about meeting the Pope?
But it's like you described 1985 like you weren't working on this. Weren't you working on The Simpsons at that point?
No, there were no Simpsons yet. And so many nerds right now are dialing in
okay.
to a pre-recorded show, which so it's a waste of everyone's time. No, I was working. It was my first show that I worked on, which was called Not Necessarily the News, which was on HBO back when HBO was only available in motels. And
so you had just graduated from college?
Just graduated from college, yeah.
So you 85. So you graduated in 84?
No, I graduated in 85.
85. Wow.
Which makes me
– I'm so much more younger than you.
Well, I'll be honest. I'm 58 years old.
58. You don't look a day over 57.
Yeah. Well, how old are you?
That's kind of personal. I'd rather not talk about
I see it. What you did. You got me to reveal my age.
I'm 55. Age. But okay. We're both creepy. You know what I mean? We're both kind of on the creepy end.
Well,
but
we're married, only,
so we don't have to worry about
we're
it.
We're only creepy in certain contexts. I think it's really creepy that you and I like to hang around
strip clubs,
but not even go outside. We hang around up front and we try and tell people to go into the strip club.
We tailgate. We call it tailgating.
Yeah.
We tailgate in front of strip clubs.
You know
clubs.
What we do? Like, this is a thing Gaffigan and I do. Can I call you Gaffigan?
You can call me that.
Because you taught us to laugh again. We love to, and this is a thing we trade off, but we started doing this. I want to say we started doing this in like 1998, mm-hmm. but Jim Gaffigan and I started, I don't know how we started doing it, but we started tailgating and barbecuing out in front of strip clubs.
Yeah.
And it's fantastic. We were the first people to do it and still the only people to do it.
And most of the guys going in, we're like, come on over. And they're like, no, I'd rather not be identified. And we're like, don't worry. There's cameras everywhere. And they're like, what do you mean cameras? And sometimes they'd leave.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But the other thing, too, is we found out that a lot of guys going into strip clubs didn't want to hang out with us and pound beer and eat ribs. They wanted to go in and look at almost naked or naked women dancing.
Yeah.
They were not interested in hanging out with us and having...
It's weird because, like, I know they serve food. Sometimes there's a buffet in strip clubs because, you know, like...
It's very good, the food there.
The people are like, oh, I'm just going for the food. There happens to be naked women.
Right.
You know, I didn't even notice that. I'm mostly going for the wings. And and I'm like, you don't have to go in. We'd say, you don't have to go in. We have food here. Mm-hmm. It's free. And they're like, no, you know what? Right, I prefer right. it. You know, they have better chafing dishes inside. You know, that's they a have, lot of people there.
Yeah, they have sterno warmed food inside.
So why do you think, Conan, why do you keep doing all of this? Why do you keep doing all of this? Why do I keep doing all of this? I mean,
compulsion.
Some of it is dance. I love dance. No, but
you're
why
a very good dancer.
I, you know.
When
I,
is your question why, for example, right now I'm not doing any kind of TV show.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just doing this and I really love it. It is kind of, and I shouldn't say the highlight of my day because I have a family. That could come out wrong, but it makes me very happy. It's not logical to do this for a living or aspire to it. It's a very strange thing. And I think the same thing about music. It's just a compulsion. It has to
be. Yeah, I mean, it is this strange.
Did you decide at one point, I am going to be a comedian? And when you did, didn't it seem ridiculous?
Oh, absolutely ridiculous. It's much more normalized now, but like I feel that when it was kind of brought up to my family, I'm thinking of being a comedian. They're like, you're joking, right? You know, like that's not a real occupation. You know what I mean? So going beyond that, like even doing these comedy specials, it is really an amazing sense of accomplishment that you feel. I mean, just coming up with a new joke or doing a good podcast, it's amazing the buzz you get from it.
Right.
And it's so strange how it's something that it's not as if people you know, you think that you're like, well, I did that, I'm done. Like there's this mythology of like Johnny Carson retiring and you never see him again. Mm-hmm. And it's like, even when like Letterman retired and then he started doing the Netflix show, I'm mm-hmm. like, yeah, of course. It's like, you can't not get the buzz.
You know, the other thing too is that show business changed. So it used to be that there were very few slots in show business. And I feel I got into this in 93, the late night show, and the old order still existed. There were very few networks.
Yeah.
And there were hardly any late night shows. You know, a slot has opened and it was like this millennial once in a thousand years, a slot opens and who will get it? And I got it. And there was this feeling of you have now been welcomed into the order of those who are in broadcasting.
Yeah.
And now we live in a completely different world where there's literally 150,000 hours of entertainment available to everybody all the time. So no one's saying I've got to rush home because my favorite late night show is starting.
It's it's amazing. It's, you know, it's also going to come a time where, because we've seen the numbers go down on these late shows, where eventually there will be these late night shows to no one's fault. They'll be like, they have five people watching them, Bob, Phil, Sally, you know, like it's literally they're going to be able to identify these people.
Well, what happens too is that no one's all the clips are online.
Yeah.
And I have people coming up to me all the time. I just went up to Seattle for Thanksgiving. People come up to me in the airport and they'd be like, oh, I just saw that thing you did. And they're talking about something. First of all, I usually don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
But often it's something that they just saw online from 9 years ago. Yeah. But they just saw it. And so I'm starting to get the feeling that I can probably never do – I mean, I want to keep making stuff, and I intend to. Yeah. But if I never did anything again, I think when I'm like 110 and just a brain in a jar, people might be coming in and going, that thing you did last night, I just checked it out. Where you, you know, you and Tony Bennett get in those go-karts and smash into that thing made of custard. And I'm like, oh, right. Yeah. Someone looks it up. That was 1994. But someone just experienced it and had a chuckle. So it is very different. It used to be, you know, when Johnny Carson left The Tonight Show, it was like the sky parted. There was a portal and he ascended up into it and then he was disappeared.
Yeah.
Whereas now there's really no reason, if you're interested in making stuff, which is – I reduce it to that.
Yeah.
I know you're the same way. We like to make stuff.
Yeah.
It beats not making stuff. It's really fun, and it's a compulsion.
There's a reward that people don't realize, and it's not about – it's not a monetary thing. It's literally a sense of accomplishment, which seems odd. I don't know. It's we figured it all out, Conan.
I think we figured out so many things, and yet I'm stupider than when this started.
Yes, that all happened.
How did that happen?
Let me talk about this really quickly. So, like, when you were in the airport, flying to Seattle. I find this really fascinating. People always come up and they say the same thing, which is they're being polite. They're like, "I don't want to interrupt," but they're interrupting.
Right.
I don't want to interrupt. But, and I'll be like at dinner with my family, I don't want to interrupt, but can I get a photo? And you're like, but I'm eating with my family.
Yeah. And then you famously, you're kind of well known as a guy that sort of flips out on people when they come up to you, you know? No, I mean, you're okay with me saying that. Like there are a lot of Gaffigan stories about.
A lot of like throwing phones.
Yeah. And a lot of like, oh, a vet in a wheelchair came up to you and you and said, I really hate to interrupt you.
It was a veterinarian. It wasn't a war.
Oh, I know. That's what I meant. Veterinarian in a wheelchair and who also didn't need the wheelchair. Who just a lazy veterinarian.
Just a lazy vet. Like they were like, oh my gosh.
Oh my God. I insisted on getting one of these.
That vet had also complained about too many females becoming veterinarians.
Yes. So then it was a bad veterinarian.
It was emasculating the occupation.
My point is, you really lost it on that lazy veterinarian.
That lazy vet.
And started screaming at them.
Yes.
And saying, do you know who I am? I'm Jim Gaffigan. I'm the one that taught America to laugh again, which, by the way, you've got to stop saying that. It's such bullshit.
It's a tragic end. It's a tragic end. I don't know what I'm going to do.
You know, we talk about compulsion and why we do these things. I want to talk about this. You have another special, a Comedy Monster. It's going to be on Netflix.
Yes.
It's December 21st, which I believe is tomorrow. I don't look at my calendar often.
Yeah.
And but I believe that's coming out tomorrow, the 21st. And this is your ninth comedy special.
Yeah.
Talk about compulsion. I want to pay you a compliment. I have had a front row seat to just about every really great comedian of my era. I think you might be the most prolific or one of the most prolific
that's
of
very nice.
I'm not going to say the most. I'm going to say one of 600,000 others. No,
yeah,
no,
just like any other human.
None of it's
good, but you just pump out the shit.
Like a soft serve machine that's just that makes diarrhea.
Right, right.
But round the clock. I am going to get this compliment out in clean form. I am stunned. Every time you would come on the show, you would have a completely new set that was completely different from your last set. Always great material. And then I felt like I could probably get you to come back 2 days later and you would have another set. You are crazily prolific and it's all good stuff. Oh, and I, and I've always been really in awe, and I'm to the point where after you'd be on the show, I'd say, I don't understand how he does that.
Oh, well, thanks.
Jim, I adore talking to you. This is your thanks second so time much. On the podcast.
I know. I feel honored.
And we don't, you know, we haven't been doing repeat guests. And
really? Oh.
No. And so I just, I love talking to you, and I'd be happy to talk to you in an hour from now.
There you go.
But I'm really looking forward to the special, Jim Gaffigan Comedy Monster, on Netflix. I'm going to get my Netflix warmed up.
Yeah.
Yeah, it takes my TV 45 minutes to warm up
right.
to Netflix. And thanks so much for
Thank
stopping
you for
by.
Having
you're
me. A, Appreciate it.
You're not a great man, but you're a very good man.
Interesting. I'm interesting for like an hour.
You're 50 minutes.
50 minutes.
You're interesting
53,
for 50.
53. Around 54, you're like, ugh.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks so much.
Guys, it's our last episode before Christmas, the Yuletide season.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
I know, Sonia, you celebrate Armenian Christmas, which is later, right?
Yeah, I celebrate both, but to give myself more time to get gifts, I say I celebrate Armenian Christmas.
Oh, every wow. year when Christmas comes, and this is, I've known Sonia a long time, Christmas comes and I give her her gift, and it's always, you know, as you can imagine, I'm always like surprised. And she's like, oh my God. And I go, and here are the keys. And
a locker.
A diary.
I get her a gym locker from 1968. No, I get her a nice.
You always are very generous.
Yeah, I give
gifts.
You a nice gift.
Yeah.
And then I'm kind of, there's part of me that's waiting. We're like, oh, what am I going to get from Sonia? And it's nothing.
What?
I don't get any Christmas gift. But then it's because I forget that Sonia is very happy to get a Christmas gift.
Yeah.
But what she really likes to do then is only give gifts on Armenian Christmas, mm-hmm. which is a couple of weeks later, right?
It's January 6th. Yeah. Yes. Oh. It's the Orthodox Christmas.
It's the Orthodox Christmas. And to give a shout out, the Armenians were the original, it's the oldest sect of Christianity, isn't
it? It's the first country to accept Christianity as the national religion. They did it in 301. The Greeks will say they did it, but they didn't.
The Greeks say a lot of shit.
Yeah, the but Greeks. Can we all agree on the Greeks?
Don't get me started on the Greeks. What if that's the one distinguishing characteristic of our podcast is, man, there's a lot of Greek hate going around on Conan's podcast.
Conan O'Brien needs a friend. No Greekies.
But no Greeks.
No Greekies?
Yeah. Conan O'Brien has banned Zach Galifianakis from his podcast.
As he's an upcoming guest.
I know, he's on soon.
Hey, Zach, you're on my shit list. You and all those other Greeks. Aristotle.
Aristotle's on your shit list.
Oh, yeah. Man, when I see that guy coming,
he
I
can't
go the
come
other
on
way.
This podcast.
He can't. I don't want to listen to his sort of weird pseudo-wisdom. Holidays are a little loaded for me. I want to preface this by saying I love my wife very much. And whenever someone says that, whenever someone in entertainment says that a lot, you know that their marriage is in trouble.
Yes.
No, my wife, Liza, is terrific. But I'm realizing that we have very different philosophies about Christmas decorations.
Mm. Okay.
I'm realizing that my wife is very tasteful.
Yes.
She comes from a more waspish culture.
Okay.
And they're very tasteful people and good people. And of course, I come from horrible Irish pirates. And I'm realizing that whenever Christmas comes around, I'm always trying to put up, my wife always just wants there to be kind of white lights, just pure white lights and not too many of them, but just an appropriate amount.
Very elegant, very
and simple. And I realize that I'm always, whenever she's doing that, I'm always in the corner trying to order a plastic Santa on a toilet that spins, that goes on your front yard. I have that in me. I like multicolored lights at Christmas.
Yeah.
And I know that I am a full-grown adult and there's no excuse for it, but I like multicolored lights.
I don't think you need to explain yourself
and
for that.
Yeah.
I do too.
Yeah.
No. My wife says that's cool on the tree, but I swear to God, if I was let free, there would be, you know, angels and Santas and snowmen.
You just rocketing shit around. And tinsel.
Yeah. Yeah, just shit and tinsel all over the place. I can't help it. I have, and I realized that when I was a kid, my brother Neil really led the charge. He got from my grandparents, he got like this light up Santa Claus that was really like over the top tacky, and a light up snowman, and he hung them without my parents' permission. He hung them out the front door of our out of his window, which is the side of the that's facing the street. And just he put up as much of that stuff as possible. And this Santa looked like a drunk. It looked like a big fat drunk man.
Oh no.
Who was lit. And it was one of those ones that was made in like the late 40s or early 50s.
Yeah.
Whoa. And he had like he was a leering drunk Santa, and then a big Frosty the Snowman. And my brother Neil would just, with no sense of decorum, would just throw these things out the window, and they would hang there off an extension cord. And my mother, of course, was horrified. But I think I grew up with that, thinking that's what it should be.
Yeah.
I want all that stuff. And so I've noticed that whenever I start to pitch a Christmas decoration to my wife, her whole body tenses. I can just see her whole body tense. Like she's like, the second before an automobile accident, the way someone tenses up and puts their arms up, and she knows anything I say is going to be let's think about that.
Yeah,
let's think about a leprechaun that's wearing a Santa hat.
Oh no,
that shoots M&Ms out its ass. Let's just think about that.
That sounds cool.
And I'm like, it's only $44, and they can deliver it tomorrow.
Oh, you can play Human Centipede with that.
I did order a bunch of Human Centipede Santas once a couple years ago.
And she didn't want it out there?
No.
Oh, what? Yeah. Liza, that's unreasonable. Yeah.
I know. Yeah. Liza.
Come on.
Liza, why are you harshing my mellow? Yeah. You know, this is my joy. Don't yuck my yum. This is my joy.
Don't yuck his yum.
You know?
You know what, though? Your house is very elegant and sophisticated, so it would be weird if you had like a drunken leprechaun.
I know,
corner.
But there's part of me that your true nature, which is, it's not just my DNA, but it's also how I was raised and the influence of my oldest brother, Neil. There's part of me that just wants to go hog wild.
Yeah.
And be insane. It's a time to be insane.
Could you do your office that way? Like, couldn't you have a little allocated room just for your Christmas fun?
A little Conan corner.
Yeah. A little playtime.
No, I want to impose it on other people, you know?
Yeah. Oh.
I want other people to be forced to see it.
You should take an apartment in the city that's not for a lover, but just to decorate.
A pied a terre. I love that. Decoration.
Yeah. I love that. I'll be the only celebrity that got a secret apartment on the side, not to meet my mistress, but to just decorate with tacky Christmas crap. And then I go there and I drink overly sweet instant cocoa and watch Frosty the Snowman backwards. In my feety pajamas, and then occasionally walk outside and look at my tacky little pied-à-terre.
Yeah, that's good.
And then everyone in the neighborhood's like, Conan must have a mistress in there. And I'm like, huh, mistress? Yes, mistress.
Yes.
I lie.
Mistress Claus.
What's that? She... National Enquirer? Yes, mistress in there, just so I look like less of a loser. Because no one would rent this just to decorate it with tacky Christmas shit.
Yeah.
No, mistress. Mistress in there, yes. Her name's Santina. Klaus. What? You seem like a bad liar, Conan.
If you were allowed to do whatever you wanted, would it be like the house in Christmas Vacation?
Yeah, it would be terrible.
Oh, yeah.
No, I wouldn't go that far, but it would be bad. My wife is right. I do think my wife is right.
Right.
But as she is in most things, except in choice of husband.
No.
She missed it there. She could have done better. But I think she's right. But there's this impulse I have, which is, oh my God, you know, I could, there's no reason why that piece of furniture can't have multicolored lights wrapped around it.
I get it though. There's a like tough tug of war between the elegance, but also Christmas is a season of like childhood joy and kind of unbridled
and excess,
fun.
Excess.
Yeah, yeah,
and,
right.
And I think it's come to represent, you know, America's expression of its dominance in the world. And capitalism and its defeat of other forms of organizing society. Okay. Well, anyway.
My God. What did you do to Christmas?
That's what I think Christmas is all about. You heard it here first on Conan O'Brien Can't Stand the Greeks.
Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. With Conan O'Brien, Sonam Movsesian, and Matt Gourley. Produced by me, Matt Gourley. Executive produced by Adam Sachs, Joanna Solitaroff, and Jeff Ross at Team Coco, and Colin Anderson and Cody Fisher at Earwolf. Theme song by The White Stripes. Incidental music by Jimmy Vivino. Take it away, Jimmy. Our supervising producer is Aaron Blair, and our associate talent producer is Jennifer Samples. Engineering by Will Beckton. Talent booking by Paula Davis, Gina Batista, and Britt Kahn. You can rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts, and you might find your review read on a future episode. Got a question for Conan? Call the Team Coco hotline at 323-451-2821 and leave a message. It, too, could be featured on a future episode. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded.
This has been a Team Coco production in association with Earwolf.